You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. Hope all of you are managing to stay cool this very hot July afternoon here in New York. The temperature was over 100 degrees today. That's a little bit too warm for my liking, and I suspect for most people's liking. I had planned to start out today telling you, well, let me start out at the very top telling you that my name is Mike Cutler. For those of you not familiar with me, I'm a retired INS agent, and I'm filling in for Tom Garcia on Fridays this summer. Tom is an American Airlines pilot in his prior life, as I like to say. He was a naval aviator, a Top Gun instructor, great American. It's a privilege and an honor to fill in for him. But I'm not in any way, shape, or form able to replace Tom. He's an amazing guy, but I am honored that he's given me this wonderful opportunity to spend Fridays with all of you who are out there listening. And I hope the audience continues to grow. And if you like how this program goes, then I ask you to please let your friends know, because my job, my mission, as a former immigration agent, as a New Yorker who saw 9/11 up close and far too in person. And as a fellow American, my goal is to get you, our fellow citizens, and our leaders in Washington, so-called, to understand why it is critical that we get our borders under control, that we create an immigration system that has real integrity, that not only protects us physically, economically, and from other perspectives, but also honors the untold millions of lawful immigrants since the founding of this great nation who came to America in accordance with law, followed the law, and built this nation up. They and their descendants are the folks who made America, America. And I don't care where they came from. This isn't about ethnicity, race, religion. The only distinction that I make is the distinction that the immigration laws that I enforced for 30 years make, and that is whether or not a person is a citizen of the United States or not. And you know, the open borders crowd talk about, oh my gosh, this is racism and people that don't want people from other countries and they're xenophobic. I'm a New Yorker. New York is the most ethnically diverse city, not only in the United States, I would argue in the world, ladies and gentlemen. And I love New York. I love living in a city with the rich diversity to be found here. So I want to make it clear. My issue is not about ethnicity, race, or religion. My ethnicity is about citizenship. We, the people. I'm, in fact, the son of an immigrant. My mom came here ahead of the Holocaust. My grandma died in the Holocaust. I'd be the last one to say, oh, no, we can't have anybody ever immigrate to America. I just want to make sure that the system works. And we're going to get to that in a moment. But as you may or may not know, there's been apparently two terrorist attacks in Norway today. One attack, a bomb went off in the government office building, a headquarters, two dead, a number of people injured. And then ABC News reporting that 30 people were killed in a youth camp where they train or educate kids. I guess these are the children of the Labor Party. So we've had two attacks in Norway. Could be Al-Qaeda. I haven't heard anything definitive, but we do know that those bums tend to like to do coordinated attacks. Potentially this was a coordinated attack. And it drives home the point, yet again, that we live in a perilous world, that we live in a world where we're dealing with narco-traffickers and narco-terrorists and Al-Qaeda and Hamas and Hezbollah and a bunch of folks who for ideological purposes, for purposes of power and wanting to acquire wealth, you know, the whole gamut of why countries attack other countries, why we have this problem with Islamofascist terrorists who want to destroy the West. And we need to look at what our country is and is not doing on behalf of its citizens. I'm working on a commentary for a wonderful organization called CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. I'm a senior fellow with CAPS, and I'm in the midst, in fact, of authoring a blog posting for them. I do that every week. And this time I'm going to be looking at this idea of political legitimacy, the idea that the people of a country have to feel that that government is looking out for their best interests. And if you look at where we are today, very few Americans believe that America is really looking out for Americans. I think the Tea Party, I know there's a lot of folks out there who are conservative, but in my travels, I have met quite a few people who call themselves Tea Party members who in reality are, like myself, disgruntled Democrats. I'm still registered as a Democrat, but this is across the board. The other night, I was watching a program about the space program, and we'll get to that in a moment also. Lots of stuff to talk about today. And they were interviewing some of the astronauts who have flown to the moon, and I've been privileged. I met Jim Lovell and Dave Scott and Jim McDivitt and Gene Kranz, who was mission control. And so I've had this privilege of meeting these folks. And now, of course, that the space shuttle has been grounded forever, may it rest in peace. Here we are without the ability to be able to send our own astronauts into space. Maybe we need to change the logo that NASA has. You know, they used to have those computer-looking letters, and they went back to the original logo. They call it the meatball. Maybe now it ought to be a big hand with the thumb sticking out looking for American astronauts to hitch a ride. And the Russians, of course, have turned into wonderful capitalists. They're now roughly doubling what they now charge our astronauts for a ride on the Soyuz, because they know that they are now the only show in town. But as I watched this wonderful retrospective, and they talked about what it was like to build the early rockets to get us to the moon, and they were talking about the lunar landing, well, the political backdrop back then in 1969, 1970, 71 was the Vietnam War. And they made a point of something that I had forgotten. During the Vietnam War, our government initially said that we were not bombing Cambodia, and then it came out, my gosh, we were. And people took to the streets and demonstrated. They felt betrayed. This is supposed to be government of the people, by the people, for the people. And what had happened? Our government lied to its own citizens. You know, we've taken it for granted that when some politician, and I don't care if they're from the Hopping Kangaroo Party, almost every one of these bums, when they get in front of a microphone or a camera, if their lips are moving, they are likely lying and their noses are growing. Boy, oh boy, if you know any plastic surgeons, send them to Washington, because there's a serious need for rhinoplasty, nose jobs in that wacky town. It's only fitting that Washington was built on a swamp, on landfill. It still is landfill as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there's a couple of good guys in Washington, but boy, you got to go far and wide to find some decent people there. I hate to say this. I mean, there are some good staffers, and they work their hearts out. But you look at this duplicitous conduct. So here we were back during the Vietnam War, and the American people were outraged. They said, how could our government lie to its own citizens? You know, when I was a kid, and I'm in my 60s, if you met a politician, a mayor, a governor, a senator, a congressman, it was like, wow, I mean, this is big stuff. Look at the characters. Look at this nitwit that used to allegedly represent me. Anthony Weiner, boy, could that guy be more aptly named. And you know what he did was bizarre. It was perverse. But I just loved, if you remember that business where he had that initial interview, he had these reporters coming in one at a time, and he sat down and lied to each of them, and he said, oh, somebody hacked my account. I didn't do this. I have no idea who did this, but somebody broke into my account and sent that picture off. And one reporter said, well, whose underwear was that? Was that your underwear? Was that your I don't know, but someone did this to me. And then, of course, we know in about 3 or 4 days, the truth started to leak out. And then what did we hear? Well, now I will tell you the truth. Okay, so it was acceptable to start out lying? Are you kidding me? Anthony, if you're listening, grow up. we're not that stupid. You know, when I was an agent, I did a lot of interrogations and questionings of criminals and so forth. And I always like to tell people that were lying to me, truth is not an evolutionary process. But for Washington, truth is an evolutionary process. Look at the language that we hear from elected representatives. Listen to the nonsense that they are expecting us to swallow. Let me start out with an expression, and I want to see if you folks have been paying attention. And by the way, if you want to join me on the show, please feel free to call in. The call-in number is 310-982-4145. 310-982-4145. You can call me up. I'd love to have you join me on the air. We're hearing about shovel-ready jobs, and I wrote a commentary for CAPS about that. And you know, the first time I heard the term shovel-ready jobs, I thought, what are they talking about? Shovel-ready? Why not desk-ready? Why not computer-ready? Or laboratory-ready? Or drafting table-ready? No, we're going to provide shovel-ready jobs. Now, let's remember the same nonsense that the politicians like to spew. What do they always say? The illegal aliens do the work. Of course, they don't call them illegal aliens. The undocumented, do the work that Americans won't do. Let me tell you what. I've been driving around the city today, running errands, going about, as we all do, our daily lives. I drove by Ground Zero. And Phoenix-like, we are seeing a tower. It had been called the Freedom Tower. I think they've changed the name of it now, but it's going to be, as I understand it, 1,776 feet tall. A little symbolism there, 1776. And we're watching this majestic tower rise up from what had been Ground Zero. My father was a construction worker. He was a plumber. I hung out on those jobs. Blue-collar America, folks, built America, continues to build America. Construction work is backbreaking, it is filthy, and it's more dangerous than law enforcement statistically. I was an agent for 30 years. Statistically, construction workers suffer more injuries and more fatalities. I don't know if you knew that. So here we are, it's over 100 degrees, and on my way into the city, I'm on a highway, the road crew is out. With steaming asphalt and doing their thing. And, you know, yes, they're walking around with bandanas around their necks to catch the sweat. And maybe they're grabbing those ice-cold water bottles, and I hope they have plenty of water to keep hydrated. But they are out there in the sun beating down on them. And believe me, they weren't backing off. That work is getting done. And then you go by what was called Ground Zero. Those construction workers are out there working their hearts out to support their families, and to build up this new building. What nonsense we keep hearing from Washington. Well, the illegals do the work Americans won't do, and now we're going to get jobs for you folks that require a shovel? Meanwhile, now, you may not believe this. See, the problem is it comes at us so quickly, so fast and furious, and I hate to use that term, because when I think of Fast and Furious, I think of those hundreds of guns or those thousands of guns shipped to Mexico, killing so many Mexican lawmen and killing some of ours. Brian Terry, Border Patrol agents, apparently shot to death by one of those guns from Fast and Furious. But the news does come at us that quickly, fast and furious. And now I want to read a news release to you, and this is by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Check this out. The date of this news release is May 12th, 2011, 6 weeks ago. Washington, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement today published an expanded list of science, technology, engineering, and math degree programs that qualify eligible graduates on student visas for an optional practical training extension, an important step forward in the Obama administration's continued commitment to fixing our broken immigration system and expanding access to the nation's pool of talented, high-skilled graduates in the science and technology fields. Let me just ask you something, folks. We need to import scientists and engineers and technicians. We have 300 million Americans. NASA just laid off how many thousands of engineers and technicians and scientists because we've now done away with the space shuttle, and there's nothing in the wings. I mean, maybe if we get lucky, SpaceX but one of those other companies will fill the void. But goodness gracious, we are firing our own scientists and engineers, and what are we doing? We are bringing in kids to study in our universities to take the jobs our Americans are losing. They had the jobs, they were fired. So obviously the solution isn't to find work for the people that our government just fired. The solution is to bring in more foreign students and train them to make darn sure that they replace our American scientists, technicians, engineers, and computer programmers. Stop and think about what we are hearing here. Stop and think about what a betrayal this is of America. The immigration laws say that you may not hire a foreign worker if in so doing you drive down wages or worsen working conditions. And I got contacted by a producer at one of the business cable programs, and she said to me, "Mr. Cutler, we'd like to have you come on," because I had just testified in January about worksite enforcement, how immigration is supposed to go out there and you know, supposedly, you would think, arrest illegal aliens found in the workplace and fine employers who intentionally hire illegal aliens. Of course, now the administration has a new strategy. It's called silent rage. You got to love it. I worked for the INS for 30 years. I've never heard of anything quite like this. A silent raid is where you don't arrest anybody, except maybe the unscrupulous employer. And I helped a defense attorney, by the way, in a case where I'm convinced the employer had no idea what they were doing. The people were all hired on the books. They hired them in California and flew them to Hawaii. Their phony documents were good enough to get them past TSA, the Terminally Stupid Administration. But meanwhile, they held these farm managers accountable and wanted to charge them criminally. And they'd never even had a run-in with immigration before. So we vilify the corporations, even if apparently they did nothing wrong. You should know, by the way, that these guys were acquitted of all charges. It was an outrageous misuse of government power and government money and resources. They had to fly, I don't know how many dozens of agents from the mainland to Hawaii. Think about what that might cost to fly them there, put them up overnight, and feed them, because that's what they have to do. And then these guys were all acquitted because it was a lousy case. But so what we have now is a government that fires its engineers and brings in students. And that's what I spoke to with this young lady from this program. I said, you know, we have got to not only go after the employers, we have to go after the illegal aliens the way we used to. You know, when they passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act back in 1986, everybody that I worked with thought this was going to be good, because it was sold to us as it was sold to the American people, this Immigration Reform and Control Act, or IRCA, as a way of finally, for once and for all, balancing the scales of justice. Up until the time that that law was passed, it was not a crime to intentionally hire an illegal alien. We would get phone calls from employers who were hoping that we would lock up their illegal alien employees before they had to pay them, or because they were unionizing and were demanding safe working conditions. The stuff that went on was outrageous. It was atrocious. And so, you know, we thought, now this is good, because now, finally, it's not just the illegal alien who's subject to penalty, but the guy who intentionally hires them. So now the exploitation should be reduced, because now the employer will come to understand that if we can show that he did this intentionally, hiring all those illegals, now he's in trouble. Well, of course, so much for what's on paper. The bigger issue was whether or not we ever trained our agents in identifying bad documents, because the whole idea of immigration hinges on identity documents. And, of course, that never happened. And how many agents do you think were actually out there doing the job? A handful. So on paper, it looked great. Really, what IRCA was, folks, was an opportunity to jam a major amnesty down our throats. You know what? I have a call coming in. Let's see who's on the line and see what's going on. Hang on 1 second. Hi, you're speaking to Mike Cutler. Who's this?
Tom Garcia. How are you today, Michael?
Tom Garcia, wow, is it great to hear your voice. How are you? I should ask you, where are you as well as how are you?
Well, I am in South Florida. I just got out of a meeting with some investors where, you know, we're taking this radio show to a whole new level, and it went very well. But I just realized, hey, it's the Michael Culler show time, so I thought I'd call in and say hello and see how things are going.
Well, it's actually the Tom Garcia show, and I'm just an imposter.
Well, I think I'm going to let you keep the Friday slot if you want it, and we'll just start calling the Friday slot the Michael Culler show, and you can change the time if you want to broadcast later as well.
Okay, that's wonderful. I have to tell you what a privilege it is to work with you, Tom. You know, you're a great American, I have to tell you. The way you've served your country, I know, unfortunately, you didn't win that last election. I hope that this won't be the last time you try it, because I think we need you in Washington. We certainly need all the help we can get, and a guy like you would really do it, I think.
Well, we're going to see what we can do with this network, the USA Talk Radio Network. We're going to be making some big changes here on down the road, and I think people are going to be pretty surprised, and we're going to become almost a household name. So, but we're all working on that right now, and that in itself is going to make a difference in upcoming elections, in educating people on the kind of things that you do on your show.
Right.
I like talking about the Constitution on my show, but whatever it is on the different shows, educating people, we can call in and discuss. We'll have panels of smart people talking about different subjects, and we're going to take this. The mainstream media misses way too many things. Not so much that they lie to us typically, that they do in many cases, but I also see on some of the better networks just stuff omitted. And it's not because they're hiding anything from us. They just don't know. But we've got – there are too many of us out there, Michael, that are subject matter experts in certain fields, and we know and we have the answers. And so I think eventually the American people are going to be looking for networks like this to find out the real answer and the real information that's out there and get true quality analysis so that they can make better decisions on who to elect in the future.
Well, that's really amazing. You know, I have to tell you, you've just made my Friday afternoon telling me this. And you know what? The American people very often don't realize, if you say to somebody, do you know what the First Amendment is? And you get that immediate response, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Well, instead of the pat answer, I like to have people go back and reread it, because the First Amendment also talks about the right to peaceably assemble. Because, you know, at the founding of this great country, there was no technology. If you wanted to have a discussion or even an argument, you had to do it nose-to-nose, toe-to-toe, and eye-to-eye with the other person. And what founding fathers were saying is, as long as you're civil, it's as American as apple pie to have that discussion. And that's what's so phenomenal about this media, that we can go out there, we can have that discussion, and as you say, we can bring people to the folks who have the insight where the stories aren't being covered. I don't know if you saw this, and I know you're on my list for my commentaries. And by the way, folks, if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, we post the stuff up there. There was just a story now where our government realized that they admitted 58,000 citizens of Iraq as refugees, and now it dawned on them that they weren't screened to make certain that they aren't terrorists. And in fact, at least one of the people that they admitted is now believed to have been constructing roadside bombs and blowing up our soldiers. Now, this did not make the news, but today when there was that attack, that horrible attack in Norway, that finally people woke up to that one. But I expected, when I saw that news article that someone sent me, that this would be the lead story on every TV program. And you know what? I didn't see a single program talk about 58,000 people where they're now racing to review their files out of a concern that they may have admitted terrorists into our country.
Yes, exactly. I haven't seen that article either, but I've been out of the house and everything for the afternoon, but I'm sure I'll find it somewhere along the way. But you're right, it won't be in the mainstream media, that's for certain.
No, and I think that's what's so important. And I just provided testimony to a hearing before the House, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I was speaking to Grassley's chief counsel. And I said, you know, I don't want to inundate you with material. He says, no. He said, if I didn't get this from you, we wouldn't find it anywhere else. Now, I felt flattered that they felt that what I'm sending them is that important. But it does concern me that there's no other source of information where they can get some of this stuff. So if we can provide that, I think you're right. We can make a huge difference for our country and for our citizens.
Yeah, and the key now is going to be to making sure that we get enough exposure and can draw enough listenership in, and that's what my job is, and working on that diligently, and I think we're getting there, and we've got some exciting things coming, and we're going to eventually, the website is going to be completely redone to involve social networking, blogging, op-eds, and on and on, so that we have everything kind of in one place that people can come to and find out information on any particular subject, see what kind of shows there are and the different personalities. And we may even have a few celebrities join us in the broadcasting. Did you know that there are a lot of conservative, constitutionalist, fiscal responsible-oriented celebrities out there in Hollywood? And they're getting tired of listening to the crap that's in the mainstream media now, and many of them are looking for a way to voice their opinions and their ideas and their beliefs. And this radio show is going to be one way for them to do that.
Wow, and it used to be that way. You know, it's amazing. I think about Jimmy Stewart and Lee Marvin and Audie Murphy and all those other guys who may have played heroes on TV, but they were heroes in real life as well.
Yeah. You know, even to hear a guy like Gene Simmons talking about some of the things he talks about, it's entertaining, but he's also, he's disillusioned with where things have gone. I get the feeling that he may have voted for Obama, and he's not too happy about that right now. He's not happy at all about that.
Well, I think a lot of people
are conservative or and I don't know what his political leanings are, and I really don't care. He's a smart guy, and he's now seeing through what's going on and has some interesting opinions. So it's really about, as you always say on your show, creating some discussion and getting people thinking about things versus just waiting till the last minute. I told you this in my congressional election, that a couple weeks before the actual people were scrambling. I was getting emails. All the local Tea Party type groups were getting people showing up or requests to say, "Hey, who are you recommending?" Nobody knew who to vote for. They waited till the last minute, masses, I'll say, and then they were relying on these Tea Party groups or other political oriented groups to determine how to vote because they just hadn't paid attention. And I saw it all through the campaign, people going like, "I'm tired of the mudslinging. I'm tired of all the crap and discussion about politics." But then when it came time to vote, they weren't informed. So
I think you're right. But by the way, for you folks listening, I think that we are falling victim to our neighbors who aren't voting, who aren't engaged in the process, who don't make the phone calls to their member of Congress or to the guy in City Hall. I always like to say democracy is not a spectator sport. But before you can engage that politician or that representative or whatever in a discussion and tell them what you want, you need to know what you want. And that requires educating yourself. And again, that's where I think the mainstream media has really been doing an abysmal job of educating the masses. I was over at MSNBC a while back, and it was kind of funny. I was ready to go on. I'm all wired up. I got my earpiece screwed into my head. I've got my little transmitter tucked into my belt. And all of a sudden, as I'm walking towards the camera, I hear in my ear from the control room, "Mr. Cutler, have a seat. We'll get to you in about 10 minutes. And what they did was they had breaking news. And, when I was a kid, if they said news bulletin, breaking news, it was a huge story. God forbid, an airplane had crashed. The prime minister of some country was just shot. Something really momentous happened. What this was some guy in, I think, Omaha, Utah, someplace out in a small area, was being pulled over by the police and decided not to stop, and he took off. And because there was a helicopter with a camera not far away, they dispatched the chopper, and now we've got the scene of this guy in his vehicle racing from the police. The chase is on. This now became breaking national news, and as I remember correctly, the guy simply had left his wallet home and didn't want to be stopped because he didn't have his license with him. This became a 10-minute saga.
Wow.
I mean, how crazy. And I said to the producer afterwards, I said, "What is going on?" He said, "Look, I agree with you, Mr. Cutler, but we know that people love ratings, chases rather, and if they love it, it builds our ratings." So they took this precious airtime where there's certainly no shortage of major stories to discuss, and what ate up the airtime was this absurd chase by the police of some guy who had left his wallet on his dining room table. Can you make this up?
That is amazing. Yeah, the mainstream media has really gotten pretty lame.
Well, but, you know, what could you possibly – but look, you know, people say, I like reality shows. I said, I'll tell you a reality show. It's raining outside. I step outside to walk my dog. We both get wet. That's the reality show.
Wow, yeah, that's exactly it. So, well, listen, hey, I'm going to let you get back to your show,
okay.
Michael. Have a great rest of the day. Have a great weekend. We'll be in touch.
Well, you've encouraged me. I have to tell you, I certainly will. And we'll have to speak off air. But, boy, you're making my day. And I want you to know how much I appreciate what you're doing. And I've been hearing from people that they love what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing I've been hearing. And your show's been doing well and getting lots of downloads. You know, a lot of our ratings really are coming from downloads. That's pretty typical in internet radio. And we may even have a chance in the future here with where we're headed to do some syndication with AM and FM stations as well. So a lot of good stuff happening. We're going to keep working it and make it happen in the end and make a difference.
Excellent. Listen, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I know you're in Florida. It's supposed to be warm, but I hope it's not as bad as it is in New York right now. So
it's 93 outside right now and partly cloudy skies.
Well, according to my computer, it's 93 here also, but it hit 103 earlier today, or 104.
Now, see, it's cooler here in South Florida. For all you people who live up in the Northeast,
you're me this to make me feel bad. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, I am. Okay. But I don't want all of you to move down here, though. No, stay up there, please.
Okay, you got a deal.
All right. Well, anyways, have a great weekend, Michael. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Be well. Good to hear from you, Tom. Well, that was Tom Garcia. See, he actually is Tom Garcia. I'm just a bad imposter. But, you know, the point that I was trying to make, folks, and by the way, let me remind you about the call-in number if you want to join me. It's 310-982-4145. I'd love to hear from you. You know, so on the one hand, we have the government telling us we're going to create shovel-ready jobs. And on the other hand, we have this announcement from Immigration and Customs Enforcement that they're going out of their way to attract these people to come here to study, get the degrees, and then compete with our own workers. And I was going to be on this cable business program, and this woman, the producer, said to me, don't you agree with this argument that when some foreign student comes to the United States and gets that advanced degree in engineering or chemistry or biology, that we should staple a green card onto that degree when they get it? And I said, this is crazy stuff. I said, why would you do that? She said, well, how can American companies possibly remain competitive if we can't hire the best and brightest? Well, think about what that woman was saying. The best and brightest are no longer Americans. We have the politicians saying that the illegals will do the work we won't do because we're lazy. We have this woman from a business station saying to me, God, if we don't import foreign workers, we're done. There's a wonderful cartoon that I loved, Monsters vs. Aliens. Very, very well done, computer graphics. If you haven't seen it, please go see it. I think you'll find it entertaining. But at one point, you know, the premise is that some aliens, attack the Earth. And so there they are. They're sitting around the table. They got the military and the president. And someone says, call the brain trust. And some guy says, I'll get India on the line. Holy smoke, I'll get India on the line? This is the United States of America. I know we don't have a manned space program anymore, thanks to this administration, by the way, and thanks to poor planning by the prior administration as well. I mean, I love to put the blame where it belongs. But we went to the moon over 40 years ago. They were speaking to one of the astronauts who said the computer that he had in that spacecraft was tiny. You know, if you have a smartphone, you probably have 10,000 times the computing power of the entire Apollo program, the entire Apollo command module or the lunar module. But we did it. We've always had the ingenuity and the creativity. What might have been mission impossible for the rest of the world was only mission difficult for us. I remember when Kennedy said that, his words, I believe that this nation should commit itself before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. And we did it. We beat his time schedule, and we didn't do it with just one man. We did it with two on each flight who landed on the moon, and one guy remained in orbit in the command module. And then we actually, and I saw the way they did it yesterday on TV, they did a rerun, how GM got together with Boeing and built this little rover that the astronauts were able to drive around, the lunar buggy. they managed to fit it into this little 5x5x5 foot space on the side of the lunar module and had it unfold, and then they were able to drive all over the surface. And you know, that wasn't even what Kennedy had called for. We have always exceeded what was expected and required of us as Americans. That's the American way. That's the can-do spirit of America. And now here's this woman who's on a major network saying to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, if we don't do this, we're done. And I said, well, wait a moment. First of all, why are we educating foreign students when we're not even educating our own the way we should? And, you know, go back to another movie. There's a great movie called Peacemaker with George Clooney and Nicole Kidman, where Clooney plays the part of a general. And they're fighting these terrorists, and he makes the point. He says, why is it that America trains 80% of the terrorists, of the world's terrorists? And he's right. There was this woman, Siddiqui, who got her doctoral degree here in the United States at MIT and Brandeis, and she's a terrorist. She learned about biology and chemistry in our schools, and she's a terrorist. In fact, if that name sounds familiar, this is the woman who grabbed a gun and tried to kill some of our soldiers over in Iraq. We educated her. We educate so many of these characters. The Rosenbergs were executed for passing nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union back in 1953. Today, you don't have to steal the secrets. If you want to build an atom bomb, just go to one of our universities, get into a graduate school in chemistry or physics, and I'm pretty sure that you will learn enough that you can make your own bomb. I mean, this is crazy stuff. Why are we doing this? And I said, and by the way, when you speak about most major American companies that you're trying to protect, goodness gracious, we bail them out, now we're going to give them cheap labor, realize that they're multinationals. So really, does General Motors, Ford, Microsoft, or any of those other companies, GE, name the company, IBM, do they really need to employ those people here in the United States? Think of how many of those companies have factories and offices and laboratories all over the world. So why do we need to bring people here, educate them, and then let them stay here where they're competing directly with American citizens right here in the United States of America? And I'll tell you how screwed up this is. I want you folks to think about this. See, I'm a guy that wants secure borders. That makes me the bigot, right? If you believe that story, if I got a fence to sell you. Drive through some of those neighborhoods in your area, the tough neighborhoods, where there are a lot of minority kids, perhaps, who go to Appalachia. It can be white kids also. Understand, this is America. Americans aren't one flavor. We are black, and we are white, and we're of Asian ancestry. We are Christians and Jews and every denomination that you could imagine. This is what America is, as it should be. Okay, this isn't about racism. But you go into those poor neighborhoods with lots of minority kids who are going through tough times. And just because people live in poverty, and more Americans are, it's now estimated that 1 in 4 American families lives below the poverty line. That's staggering, folks. 1 in 4 Americans. 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 Americans is not getting proper nutrition. Staggering. So if you go into these neighborhoods and you see kids living in poverty, do you think that the circumstances under which they live is a reflection of their intellect, is a reflection of their desires, of their dreams, of their aspirations? Absolutely not. Those kids are every bit as brilliant and motivated as any kid you'll find on any part of this planet. But they have become disposable to the idiots running our companies, because the idiots running our companies can only understand one word: profit. Money, okay? So understand what's happened. We have taken our best resource, our children, and we are ignoring them. No one is saying, why aren't we seeking to educate those American kids, give them opportunities so that they will live much better lives? And guess what? When Americans do better, America does better. Have you heard that come from any politician? No. What you hear is this garbage, this absolute crap. Alan Greenspan, April 30th, 2009. Go to my website. You'll read it. I'll send you the article. Contact me through my website. I'll send you the article. He stood there before the Immigration Subcommittee in the U.S. Senate, chaired by Chuck Schumer, the guy that gave us the agricultural amnesty provision of the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 86, and I argued with him before that bill was passed, and when I told him he was wrong, Schumer did what Schumer does best. He basically stuck his fingers in his ears and told me to leave his office because I didn't agree with him. And what Greenspan talked about was the need to alleviate inequality in wages, which right there sounds great. Oh, inequality? Boy, that's wrong. Well, sure, it's wrong if it's about race, religion, ethnicity, or sex. Anybody who does a particular job equally well should get equal pay, period. I don't care if you're black, white, green, purple. I don't care if you're 40 years old or 50 years old, a man or a woman. That's what equality means. But what he said was that the disparity in wages, the inequality in wages when it's based on education was wrong. Please stop and let that sink into your head. To say that if you have a better education, if you have advanced degrees, you should make not much more or maybe no more than a guy who drops out of high school, that's what that means, folks. Don't take my word for it. You could actually see him say this. The video of that hearing is still available online. I'll send you the link. He referred to Americans with skills and education. You better put your seatbelt on. The privileged elite. So I called up my oldest son, who's an engineer, and I said, guess what? You better get yourself a bottle of champagne and toast to your success. He said, what in blazes are you talking about, Dad? I said, well, Greenspan just said it. You are now part of the privileged elite. This is disgraceful. This is absolutely disgraceful that Alan Greenspan, who was the architect of this disastrous situation that we're in now economically, would have the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, to say that we have created a privileged elite out of middle-class Americans. And we could solve this problem. He said it in so many words. By making Americans compete with foreign workers for their jobs. In other words, if we can open the floodgates and let all the foreign workers in, we can drive down the wages of America's middle class. It's against the law. It's against common sense. It's against decency. But this is Alan Greenspan. How do you spell elitist? G-R-E-E-N-S-P-A-N. Greenspan. Now, this has to stop, folks. America is supposed to take care of its citizens. We're being told that our borders are secure. They're not secure. And here's a question that I have for you. If our country is not willing to protect our borders, which allows criminals and terrorists to come into our country, because that's what borders are supposed to do. That's why when George W. sent our troops to Iraq, the first thing he did was send Border Patrol agents, and especially BORTAC, the Border Patrol Tactical Units, the elite of the Border Patrol, to secure the Iraqi border. Because the understanding is that if you don't, insurgents and terrorists and criminals are going to come across the border. So if you don't secure your border, you cannot defend your country. As far as I'm concerned, immigration enforcement is a component of our military. It's part of national defense. So if we are unwilling as a country to support our borders, secure those borders, then tell me why we have a military. On September 11th, 2001, 3,000 people were slaughtered within a matter of hours. To this very day, people are dying because of the toxins they ingested. Okay? Now, here's my question. We have, I forgot the exact number, we have a number, though, of nuclear aircraft carriers. These ships are unbelievable. I've seen a couple of them up close. Mind-boggling. They are cities on the ocean. They have thousands of Navy personnel, aircraft. In fact, Tom was one of those naval aviators who used to be deployed on an aircraft carrier. So we've got that. We've got the fighter planes. We've got stealth bombers. We've got tanks. We've got helicopters. We've got nuclear submarines. Did any of that do anything to prevent the attacks of 9/11? Why do we bother with a military that costs us a ton of money, that on tragic occasions causes our young people to come home wounded or not come home at all, and yet we're not willing to secure our borders? We're not willing to have an immigration system that has integrity. And we hear the lies, and I'm sick of the lies, folks. We need to give citizenship to illegal aliens, the undocumented. Do you know what the word undocumented really means? It means that they don't have a shred of paper to prove who they are. So what name would you put on their certificates of citizenship? And you know, I started to say this when Tom joined me briefly here. Let me go to this real quick story here, because here is yet another bit of brilliance. This story ran in the Washington Times just a couple of days ago, and what was the issue? They're now looking to see who overstayed their visas. These are foreign nationals, because they think that among them may be terrorists. So they're now reviewing the visa applications to see if there's information that would point our officials in the direction of terrorists. Now, here's something cute for you to think about. This goes back to what I call the Chamber of Horrors, the Chamber of Commerce. Right now, 36 countries, the citizens of those countries, are not required to apply for a visa before getting on board an airplane. If you have to fill out an application for a visa, you answer roughly 40 questions, you get fingerprinted, photographed, we check who you are beforehand, and then you come into a port of entry, and the inspector gets to make the final decision. I'm very familiar with the process. The first 4 years of my career with the INS, I was an immigration inspector. I was assigned to Kennedy Airport in New York. But when an alien doesn't fill out that form, and by the way, if you lie on that application, it's a felony. If you lie on an application for a visa just to be able to come here, maybe to get a job, you are looking at 10 years in jail maximum. If the reason for lying on that application was to get you here so you commit a crime, maybe rob a bank or rob some cars and sell them or whatever, some other crime, now you're up to a 15-year felony. If the crime you are seeking to commit or that you do commit involves narcotics, the penalty is now 20 years in jail. If the crime is actually terrorism, now we're up to 25 years. But under the visa waiver program, none of those penalties apply because there's no visa, there's no application. And that application stays on file for that visa. So now they're going through these applications to see who we admitted. Under the visa waiver program, this is a big zero. Now, what's amazing to me when you read this report, the General Accountability Office just did a study. And they went to the Pew Hispanic Center, which is, in the parlance of the Washingtonians, an NGO, a non-government organization. So an official arm, the investigative arm of Congress, the GAO, had to go to a non-government agency to get information about statistics that should be readily available to our own government, but for some bizarre reason is not. I mean, you want to talk about the gang that couldn't shoot straight. Well, here's what's interesting, though. From 2005 until 2010, approximately 36 million aliens entered the United States with temporary visas. They came with student visas, tourist visas, business visas, journalism visas. There's a whole bunch of categories. Guess how many aliens were admitted under the visa waiver program in that same five-year period? 36 million were admitted with visas, so we had applications that they could go through. You better sit down, folks, put on the seatbelt, take a deep breath. Here we go. 36 million with visas, 98 million plus under the visa waiver program. Almost three times as many without visas. So what are they going to review here? Nothing. They're going to sit there and stare at their empty desks. This is national security. But meanwhile, if you remember that crazy story, just a couple of weeks ago, TSA took this 95-year-old woman sitting in a wheelchair, and they subjected her to a search because someone said they felt something in her adult diaper. My gosh, I hope it was brown and smelly. What do you do? I mean, how do you even begin to comprehend this? This is the kind of incompetent foolishness that drives me right up a wall. And by the way, two or three days after this woman got groped, they found an operational taser in the back pocket of an airliner seat. So what are we doing? We're searching 95-year-old women who were wheelchair-bound, but somehow an electric shocking device got past all that security. You see, the problem is that too many of our fellow citizens are refusing to act. You know, Lamar Smith and David Vitter. Lamar Smith is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and he's an old friend. I've worked with him on so many issues. Real good guy. I did my first hearing for him way back in 97, and he got together with David Vitter to try to get a bill through. I don't know what the likelihood is, but it's called the HALT Act. HALT, H-A-L-T, is an acronym for Hinder the Administration's Legalization Temptation. It sounds kind of funny, but let me tell you what they're doing right now. Right now, the union, the people that represent the agents over at Immigration and Customs Enforcement, found out that there's a memo out there that was written by John Morton, who heads up ICE. He's the guy in charge. He's the honcho. And he said that these are the factors to consider when exercising prosecutorial discretion. I mean, this is absolutely amazing. I almost feel like the old Johnny Carson, Ed McMahon routine, for those of you old enough to remember when Johnny Carson would come up with a list of 10 items, and Ed McMahon would say, it's amazing how in that one little list you've come up with everything, and then they add more. Well, this is add more. So here we go. The agency's civil immigration and enforcement priority. That's one of the factors. The person's length of presence in the United States, with particular consideration given to presence while in lawful status. So if he came in on a tourist visa and overstayed, I mean, I don't even understand what that means. This is crazy. The circumstances of the person's arrival and the manner of his entry, especially if he came as a young child. Sounds like the Dream Act, doesn't it? The person's pursuit of education in the United States, which means that, by the way, we the taxpayers paid for that education. So if you come here and you go to school, we're not going to deport you. What are we doing? Whether the person or the person's immediate relative has served in the military, if the guy's an illegal alien, why was he in the military? It's a felony for an illegal alien to possess a firearm. And if the guy lost his lawful status because he committed a felony, then why do we want to have a convicted felon remain in the United States? And we can go on forever. And whether the person is the primary caretaker of a person with a mental or physical disability, well, what does that mean? You have an aunt who broke her leg, so we're not going to send you home? You know, the problem is, Doris Meisner used to be our commissioner back when I was an agent, and she used to talk about the need for immigration to be customer-oriented. Now, I'll tell you what. I agree with Doris Meisner, believe it or not. I think that the way we enforce the immigration laws should be customer-oriented. The problem is, I always thought that the customers were the citizens of the United States of America. Doris Meisner, this administration, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and by the way, members on the Republican side also, you know, we can go on and talk about all these people, believe that the customers are illegal aliens. What country would say to somebody, if you're here illegally, we want to make you a citizen. Run the border and we'll give you citizenship. There's only one reason in my world why you'd want to give citizenship to somebody who runs the border, if you're trying to put together an Olympic track and field team. So if you can demonstrate, I guess, that you can run the border real fast or maybe swim across the Rio Grande real fast, then maybe you have some kind of athletic prowess. You know, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek. It's a matter of frustration, folks. We've lost almost every expectation of privacy and freedom in the name of national security. We have. And what are we getting in exchange for it? What are we getting when a 95-year-old woman gets groped by a member of the Terminally Stupid Administration? Look, and I know there are good people out there who work for TSA, and I've met so many of them in my travels around the country, and I know some of you guys are and gals are very upset with what's going on, that it's a paycheck and you need it, because God knows it's certainly hard to come by a job these days. Gosh, there's got to be some sense to this. And then, you know, we have people vilifying the unions. Oh, those lousy unions and those civil servants. And then I had some guy say something to me the other day from the Tea Party, and he says, well, we've got to shrink the government. I said, no, it's not about shrinking the government. It's about making certain that when we put people to work for the government, that their jobs are important and that we don't throw impediments in their path. And then we're going to get to a point that I want to make, and I know this is a point of disagreement that I have with Lamar Smith, and I could not possibly respect Congressman Smith more than I do. As I've said, I've worked with him for years. In fact, he was kind enough to invite me to the very first immigration hearing that was conducted when he assumed the chairmanship of the very powerful House Judiciary Committee, and that was just this past January. But he came up with a bill that would mandate E-Verify. And I am a huge fan of E-Verify because this helps to make it more difficult for an illegal alien to get a job. And if we can keep working to improve the system, we can also take a lot of the headaches away from employers if it's managed properly. Forget the lies you're hearing from the Chamber of Commerce. That's what they do best. They lie well. Because all they want to do is bring as many people in, because when you bring people in, it's more business, more money. But what they've done is to create this consortium called the Discover America Partnership, and joining them are the hotel and hospitality industries, and now even the national retailers. I guess they hope that people will buy these little souvenirs or T-shirts and go home with them. But in point of fact, these people know nothing about national security. They made strong recommendations about expanding the visa waiver program and how visas should be processed more quickly. I was interviewed by the Washington Times about this story. My concern is that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America. And anyway, Congressman Smith put together a bill that has some really great issues in there. E-Verify is one of them. But my problem is that it would preempt the states. And, you know, I've worked with Arizona. I just helped Indiana get a bill passed, SB 590 in Arizona, SB 1070. And we've had Supreme Court decisions that say that the states have the right at least to go after business licenses. And there are other cases that are currently pending. In fact, I've been involved with those cases. So we're getting great decisions out of the Supreme Court. You know, it's like, wow, finally some semblance of sanity here. So why would we want to give up on this issue of states' rights to be able to enforce the immigration laws that clearly this administration has absolutely no intention of enforcing, and in fact has done everything in its power to obstruct, which is why they sued the state of Arizona. And I know how important E-Verify is, and Congressman Smith, on the off chance you're listening to me, this isn't a personal thing. I think you're a great leader. I think you're a national treasure. I think this time you're wrong. And for me, my going to Washington and doing what I've done ever since 9/11 has always been a matter of conscience, a matter of saying what I believed is right. And I will always do that. Otherwise, it becomes pointless. And I know that Mr. Smith has always respected diversity of opinion. It's kind of strange for me to be on the opposite side on an argument where he is concerned. But I really and truly believe that it would be a huge mistake to take the states out of the equation. And when people say, well, 287G is there, and that means that the police can still arrest illegal aliens, and I've heard these arguments, what people seem to forget is the way that the federal government can thwart the best efforts. Believe me, I know. I worked for that agency for 30 years, and the biggest impediment we had to doing the job was the agency that we worked for. And that's why the unions are important, because if you try to do your job a little bit too successfully, you can wind up in deep trouble. I mean, I was removed as an agent for daring to testify before Congress without the clearance of my agency after 9/11. And please remember what 9/11 was like for those of us who were here in New York. The ashes landed on us. My neighbors were killed that night. My neighbors were out in the street. I stepped out of my house. It was weird. There were no airplanes flying because everything was grounded by the FAA in the wake of the attacks. And I can't tell you how many of my neighbors were out on the street, sitting at the curb, crying their eyes out, lighting candles. They didn't know where their wives were. They didn't know where their children were. They didn't know where their parents or their brothers or their sisters or their best friends were. And they never got to see them again. So it had a profound impact. I think everybody who was in New York is still suffering from post-traumatic stress. So this is what has motivated me. And when I testified, first for Tom Tancredo, and then when I heard from Henry Hyde and Jim Sensenbrenner and Lamar Smith. In fact, Lamar Smith has been involved in these processes. I testified without permission. And that was enough for my agency to say, well, you have an injured leg. You're not fit for duty. You're no longer an agent. Have a nice day. And this happened the day after I did my first hearing for Tom Tancredo. So clearly, we need to have unions protect civil servants. And for those of you out there who disagree, contact me. I'd love to have that debate. Remember, the First Amendment is about the right to peaceably assemble. The point of peaceably assembling is to have these discussions. I don't want unions taking, you know, their power and doing harm to us, but there needs to be balance. There needs to be equilibrium. If it wasn't for the American Federation of Government Employees coming forward and talking about this memo issued by John Morton, guess what, folks? We wouldn't know about it. We're now looking at Fast and Furious about these hundreds, if not thousands, of guns that were sent to Mexico. And I guarantee you these guns are going to be showing up in American cities. These borders are not secure. The only place where you can find an American border, folks, is on a map. Go to a bookstore, buy yourself a map of the United States, and you'll see a border. Many parts of our country have no borders. And the people that come across the border also do so at international airports and seaports. And we as a country have lost our way. It's both parties. And I think it's that we have become hostage in both sides of the aisle to the extremists. I think the average American wants this great bus, you know, America, if it was a big bus with a flag on it, they want it to be driven on the highway. Now, we may argue about the left lane, the middle lane, or the right lane, but we want that bus to stay firmly on the road and be driven at a sensible speed. But it seems as though on the left, the Democratic Party, you have the Looney Tunes that want to jump the guardrail into the oncoming traffic. And then you've got the right wing nuts that go completely haywire in the opposite direction on the other side who want to drive down the embankment. I think most Americans possess good common sense and are basically, literally and figuratively in this case, middle of the roaders. But you know what's wrong with you folks? You have not been involved in your own government. You have not been involved in your own government. If you go to a restaurant, I cannot imagine that you say to a waiter or waitress, throw some junk on the plate, I'll eat whatever it is. And certainly if you did say it, you couldn't complain about what they served you, could you? I've been to enough restaurants, and boy, I have seen people nitpick. I want it medium well, and I don't want this, but I want that. They don't want lettuce, but I want tomato. You know, boy, we've all seen that. Well, why aren't we as specific where it comes to giving marching orders, if you will, to our elected representatives? When we buy a new car, we don't say to the salesman, put something in my driveway. I don't care what the color is, two doors, four doors, stick shift, automatic, sunroof, no sunroof, leather interior, who cares? Just put a car in my driveway, and whatever it costs, I'll write the check. Do you know anybody that buys a car that way? Folks, you really need to get involved, and I think it's a good step. If you're listening to my voice, then obviously you have an interest in these issues. And my goal, because all I want to do now is do everything in my power to educate as many Americans, to make our voices heard by as many members of Congress, and also on the city and state level. These folks are supposed to represent us. They can't represent us unless we are giving them instructions. If you go to work and you have a boss, I am certain he tells you what's expected of you. Well, those politicians with their lofty titles and their big arrogant egos, guess what, folks? They are our employees. There are 535 members of Congress. There are 300 million Americans. We got them outnumbered. Political campaigns, contributions rather, if I can get the words all out at one time, is the root cause of so much of the problem. We have politicians accepting money hand over fist. As a federal agent, I couldn't accept as much as a cup of coffee. Because the concern was that once you take something from somebody, there's now an expectation. And you know what? If you write a check for some congressman who's running and you say, here's $50 because I believe in your message, you're not expecting anything. You write a check for $100. You're still not expecting anything. But when people start writing checks for thousands of dollars, you better believe there's an expectation. But there's a way that we can counter it. The reason they need the money is for the campaign commercials to get the message out there. The internet can change that equation, and involvement by we the people can change that equation. We've got to go back to being Americans. When I was a kid, there was a wonderful saying that said that if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. The idea was if you showed creativity, initiative, ingenuity, you could make a ton of money. That was the American dream. Get that education. Be the inventor. Be that tinkerer in your basement, right? Thomas Edison. Think about that. All these inventors who became mega wealthy by using creativity and ingenuity. They built the better mousetrap, and they were rewarded for it. We don't even hear that saying today. We've become the nation where now the pathway to success seems to be either a lawsuit or to buy a winning lottery ticket. You got to be in it to win it. Whatever happened to the mousetrap? We've got to turn back the clock. Sometimes progress isn't progress. We the people are the citizens of the most successful country that the human species has ever produced. We're not flawless. We have our problems. But I will put up America against any other country that has ever been brought into existence in the history of the human race. You look at our achievements. You look at what we stand for. You look at our willingness to make amends for the mistakes that we make. But unless this country survives and survives as a strong country, then we will no longer be the world leader that we need to be to protect this idea of egalitarianism and democracy and freedom. When we're on an airplane, thinking about Tom Garcia's career as a pilot, they always tell you, if that oxygen mask comes down, folks, put yours on first before you help anybody else. Right now, America needs the oxygen mask. Right now, America needs to be fortified, and Americans need to be made more secure and more successful. And that success depends on whether or not we can really get our politicians to listen to us. And that's the assignment that I'm giving all of you for homework. Start paying attention. Start opening up a dialogue with your elected representatives. Please do everything in your power to make them accountable. Because that's our job. You see, Congress is supposed to exercise oversight over the executive branch of our government. We, the people, are supposed to exercise oversight over all elected representatives and politicians. We've been doing a lousy job, and our country has been paying the price. It's not too late. We're not that far from the next election. Congress, all the folks that are out there supposedly representing us, really and truly need to hear our voices. So give it some thought. Get involved with the process. I'm counting on you. I once saw a wonderful sign on a bus when I was going to college. I used to commute by bus to my college. And it said, it was a Red Cross poster. It said to the other guy, you are the other guy. We can't keep waiting for someone else to step up to the plate. We have to do it. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Please go to capsweb.org, great organization. I'm happy to be a senior fellow with them. But what I ask you most importantly, folks, is please get involved. Democracy is not a spectator sport. I have to tell you, it's the time flies. We're actually over the time now. Hope you've been enjoying the program. I hope you'll join me next week at the same time, same website, as they say, when I will again be here filling in for Tom Garcia. And I look forward to seeing you then. Meanwhile, I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I hope that you stay cool. And really, folks, I hope that if I do nothing else, that I motivate you to really get involved and live up to our obligations as citizens of these United States. So long, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. See you next week.
To the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.